From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 10th day of October, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. USDA this morning released the October crop production report, and so who cares? The Dow Jones Industrial Average dipped below 8,000 today. How do the two impact one another? And where is the marketplace headed as officials from the industrialized nations of the world gather and the President of the United States stands in the Rose Garden and tells America we can solve this crisis but offers no new plan of action? We'll take time today to consider it all and to talk in the second half hour of the program on most of these stations with Glenn Ring. In March, he stood up at our all-day Ag Outlook meeting at the Beef House and said, "It's all over." We'll find out what he's thinking today on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures like this: December wheat at 563.5, down 41 and a quarter. March at 583.75, down 42 and one quarter. And the May at 597.5, down 43 and one quarter. December futures on out, all the limit lower, down 30 cents. December at 408.25 in the corn pit. March at 425.75, the May at 437.5, and July corn at $4.48.25, all down the limit, down 30 cents. Soybeans all down the limit as well. November soybeans at $9.10, down 70. January at 925.5, the March at 939.5, the May at 949.75, and all the rest of the contracts down the 70 cent limit in the soybean pit today. October bean meal at 251.20 on the afternoon, down $19.70. October bean oil, 36.50, down 2.94. October live cattle futures from the Mercantile Exchange off the $3 limit at 89.12.5. December down $3 at 91.30. October feeder cattle for the day at 95.45, down $3. And the October lean hogs at $66, down 97.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. November crude oil futures at $80.90 a barrel now are down $5.69. December at $79.45, down $7.17. Ethanol trading at $1.67, 19 cents lower. November gas at $6.55, down 27.5 cents. November RBOB gasoline at $1.81.2, down 21.4 cents. November heating oil, diesel fuel, down 20.2 cents at $2.21.6. And November propane futures at $1.13.5, down 5.5 cents for the day. October gold futures at $8.55 and $4.40, down $27.70 on the afternoon. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 8,085. It's just about 494 points lower for the day. The U.S. dollar is up 1.69 at 83.09. That's 83.09, up 1.69 for the U.S. dollar on the afternoon. The CRB index at 294. is down 16.47. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight it'll be mostly clear. Lows will range from 45 in northeastern Indiana to 57 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from 72 in the far northeastern parts of Illinois to 86 in the far south. The extended forecast says dry weather will continue Sunday and Monday. Next chance of rain will be on Tuesday and Tuesday night as that cool front pushes through Illinois and Indiana. And then dry weather should follow for about a day and a half before another round of showers is possible late in next week. Warmer than average temperatures should continue through Monday. And that, of course, will favor harvesting conditions in Illinois and Indiana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at the USDA reports from this morning, the financial markets in New York, and of course, the commodity markets in Chicago is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike.
Hello there, Todd.
How you feeling?
Oh, you know, not too bad. It's a time where, you know, we have these types of cycles, and you know, fortunately, when we went through that 650 level back a couple months ago, you know, that was a major chart point. We had no idea that it could fall this fast, but you know, we had talked about some of this stuff earlier in the year and then kind of put it on the back burner because of the delayed planning. So it wasn't a shock. Have we taken as much money away from the market as we want? No, not at all, but that's always the case. I suspect that we've done okay. But, you know, overall, I think that the commodity markets don't bother me as much as the outside markets. And I guess what I'm trying to do is keep a wall up between the two, but that wall is starting to crumble as far as the Wall Street problems are hitting Main Street, and now they're starting to show that they're hitting the farm gate, and today's report kind of shows that.
Well, let's take a look at the report numbers very quickly, and we'll start there, and then we've got some extra time today that we'll take and talk about Wall Street as well. Corn in the marketplace for the day. USDA crop production report shows that corn now is estimated from the United States Department of Agriculture to be a 12.2 billion bushel crop. That compares to the just nearly a 12.1 crop that was the average trade guess, and that was a September estimate as well from USDA. They raised the national average yield from 152.3 to 154. And on the soybeans, USDA now says there's a 2.983 billion bushel crop out there. Last time around, it was a 2.934. The average soybean yield now is considered to be 39.5 bushels to the acre from USDA, and that's down from the 40 bushel estimate that they made in October, rather in September. All those numbers fall in line with where you thought they should be?
No, I don't think so. I mean, in the corn, we can't argue the USDA because the yield reports are very good, and we do feel like that the trade, a lot of the trade in Chicago, was expecting a 153 to 154 yield because we had heard that, and some of the private estimates were up in that area. Didn't think it would come out all in 1 month, but that shouldn't have been a shock to the trade in Chicago today. The beans, though, we really do take issue with, and I'll tell you why. When we look at the state-by-state changes, Illinois saw a 100,000-acre increase in corn and a 200,000-acre increase in beans. South Dakota saw a 150,000-acre increase in corn and a 50,000-acre increase in beans. And most notably, North Dakota saw a 200,000-acre increase on corn and a 550,000 increase in beans. What that adds up being is a 1.25 million more acreage in both corn and beans versus just 1 month ago. And I guess our major issue with USDA is how can you see increases in both crops, especially in those three states, when all three states had either extremely dry weather and kind of struggled or had some very wet weather and kind of struggled too. It wasn't like Iowa, where Iowa made a little bit more sense. They took corn acreage down 100,000 but put 500,000 onto the beans, and I could at least understand the logic and the philosophy behind that. So that's an issue, and I think maybe we won't get what we want as far as them coming back on that, but I think what it does maybe tell us in the future, Todd, is that maybe we're going to get a lower yield here nationally, because if you look at those three states and look at most of the states where the bean acreage was increased, those are also the states that are having difficulty maintaining normal yields, and that's most likely because they either had a really dry August or they had a very late planting and a lot of replanting. So I don't think we can rule out the idea that because of today's report that yield in beans could go from 39.5 down to the 36 to 37 level, because history would say that's maybe where we're headed given what these states that they increase bean acres on are what they're really kind of combining at this point.
Anything from the rest of the numbers released by USDA that surprised you today?
Well, I think, you know, I was surprised that they lowered ethanol 100 million on decreased gasoline consumption. That said to the market, I think that was probably the most negative fundamental factor in the report, because that said, look, this economy is coming straight to your farm gate, and that was really a negative. But I think the other thing that I was questioning was, how could we go up in corn feed by 150 million bushels and go up in wheat feed by 10 million bushels? I would have thought that because corn prices have fallen, that maybe the corn feed would increase at the expense of wheat. So that maybe is picking at around the edges, but it just seemed like this report didn't have a lot of logic to it, like maybe some of the other reports have earlier this year.
Well, we'll maybe have to call Joe Persaki or some of the rest of them and see if we can't figure that out sometime next week and talk to them about some of these numbers. And I might ask you if you'd be interested in joining in on that conversation. We'll see what they have to say, probably.
You bet.
All right, so let's turn your attention then to Wall Street and talk about the numbers there. My Dow Jones Industrial Average is delayed by 15 minutes. I'll bet yours is not. So what do you show at this point, at this time in the day, for the Dow Jones?
Well, the DEES futures is pretty close to the actual Dow. It's only down about 90 right now, so they're trying to make a run here in the futures market, and the industrials is trying to start to come up with the futures here, Todd. So they are trying to put something together going into this last hour. This week, especially after Monday's trade, has been horrible from the 3 o'clock hour Eastern to the 4 o'clock hour Eastern. And you couldn't have asked for a better time to get something generated here as far as a run, because it's really hurt the markets this week, this last hour of trade. Many sell orders that came in from funds. Some have even expected, it's been unconfirmed, but it's also been suspected that even managed funds, mutual funds, are coming in and selling here. And I guess it goes back to U.S. Steel is down 80% from its 52-week high. GM is down 89% from its 52-week high. Caterpillar down over 50%. This is where these really high commodity intensive companies and manufacturing engines of growth, you know, and sucking on the commodity demand, if we lose those and we don't bring those back around, I think there is a real tangible problem where that commodity wall and that stock wall kind of break down and they both suffer, you know, for a longer period of time than we would like.
So there are a couple of things probably on the charts I would suspect you're keeping track of, which is one of them is the October low on the Dow, which was right at 7,200. I think 8,000 probably was important, and if they were to rally and stay above that today, that might be considered fairly friendly to the marketplace if it can manage to hold on to that. Other support areas, maybe 7,500. What do you see?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You really don't want to take it any lower than we've gone today as far as the Dow goes. The S&P, you really would like to see a strong close back up above 850. I think that would give a lot of confidence to the market. Now, what we have needed here these last few weeks is just to build some consistency. We saw 2 days in a row of grain trade that looked really nice. If we could have gotten yesterday today to end up like yesterday in the grain trade, I think we'd be talking a lot differently right now, and the USDA report maybe not meaning as much in terms of negativity as what we're talking about right now. And so it really, a lot depends on this G7 meeting coming up this weekend. They're meeting starting today, but I think that's a major issue going on right now, is these European governments and their economies are not talking to each other, working with one another, and I think the problems as far as more downside in the overall marketplace has started to bottom out here in the United States, but Asia and Europe continue to go lower, and it's kind of coming back into the United States. It's kind of a backwash type mentality. The European stocks were down over 10% last night, and I think most of that's due to the infighting between the major G3 countries over in Europe.
So a wait-and-see attitude until Monday for the Dow Jones Industrial Average then?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we did go ahead and get some more corn puts bought today because we closed down on limit. We did not do very well on getting bean puts bought because they shot higher out of the gate. We got a little bit done in the morning on some price orders, but it quickly went higher. The unfilled pool in beans was expected to be around 39,000 to 40,000 contracts, in corn around 50,000. We're trading on the close today probably about 30 to 35 cents lower in beans and about 12 to 15 cents lower in corn. So the prices got worse as the day went on in terms of the corn and beans, and the pool got bigger and bigger and bigger. But keep in mind, that was when we were down, you know, 400 to 500 in the Dow Jones and down about $9 in crude. I think we still have to watch the dollar, though. You and I have been talking about that. You made some excellent points last week. That's still our point leader on the on what the leading indicator is. If that dollar doesn't break, even if the stock market comes back, it's probably going to give the crude, it poses still some pressure to the crude market.
Right. So let me talk more about these pools that are available for sales in corn and soybean. Sometimes those dissipate. I think it was Wayne Nelson who was complaining on Tuesday that sometimes there are large pools that are put there that in the electronic trade can disappear or just arbitrarily now. Do you think that's actually the case?
I do, but I think that probably is an after the fact type
So they're pulled after the close?
Yeah, exactly right. And I think probably at the time of the close, if you could have gotten all those people in, that most of them would have wanted out.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this happens on Sunday night and what the industrialized nation leaders and officials come up with over the weekend, that's for sure.
It really is. I mean, it goes back to, you know, we're starting to tap into the problems. And last week when you and I talked, we talked about maybe not much demand destruction having been done here. And we do see gasoline prices starting to fall. And they're falling pretty rapidly, you know, at the pump.
Right.
And that is, like many have said, is like a tax cut. It just goes back to we don't want to turn into Japan like they were in the 1980s after they had their banking and credit crisis where they ended up being big spenders. But then when they had their recession and their credit crisis, they became massive savers, and the government took interest rates to zero, but it entrenched the people to save even more. And so it was a terrible, vicious cycle. Of they could not stimulate the economy and the government became literally powerless, and it took them a decade to turn that thing around. That's the deflationary spiral where we don't want to get into, and that was just Japan we're talking about. We're talking about Japan, Europe, and the United States this time around.
Indeed we are. Well, you stay safe, stay calm over the weekend, and get some sleep.
Okay, Todd, you too.
All right, thank you. That's Mike Zuzulow. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens on Friday afternoons.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of WILL. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Tom Fritz will be our guest on Commodity Week this week. We'll record it at 4:30 this afternoon. It will air on some of these radio stations tomorrow, but if you'd like to listen to it earlier, you can do that at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Just scroll down about halfway through the page, and you'll see the Commodity Week link. Hit Commodity Week after 6 o'clock tonight, Friday evening, and you can listen to the program anytime you'd like right there on our website at WILLAG.org. Now up next, you know the volatility in these financial and agricultural markets has forced the ag economist at the University of Illinois to reassess their view of cash rent agreements. We'll hear what Gary Schnitke, farm management specialist, has to say on the subject. Gary Schnitke and the AgEcon team at the University of Illinois say if the landowner is going to use a cash rent agreement, then it's best to reassess it every year.
Lease terms used to be, or there used to be more leasing terms of 3 years or 4 years. Now, we've seen a lot of, at least professional managers, back off of that. And we've also made the suggestion that you wouldn't want to do that because of the volatile price situation, the cost situations that are out there. You could sign a 3-year lease and not really, the economics of farming could change dramatically in 2010, 2011, making that lease either not supportable from the farmer standpoint or look out of line from the return standpoint. So leasing terms shorter rather than longer seems to be the wise option at this point in time.
There are modifications to cash rent agreements, says Gary Schnitke, that can help manage this volatility year in and year out.
And there's a number of ways of doing that. We see a lot of people setting a base cash rent and then varying that up or down depending on what actually cash or revenue does. So they could base it on what actually happens on the farm revenue, take the yields from the farm and also some index of prices, calculate whether that base rent should go up or down depending on what actual revenue has. There's another lease that we have suggested that at Illinois that is based on crop insurance parameters that sets the rent at the same time that farmers would know the base price for their crop insurance products. So
March the 15th?
March 15th, the lease, the cash rent terms would be set at that point in time. That, again, would vary rents based on what happens to base prices.
The University of Illinois written lease forms are available online for anyone to use. Just visit the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu and download them. Look for the link in red titled Farm Lease and Rent Forms. It's on the front page of the site in the upper right-hand corner under the word FAST. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois, is here. He's the general manager of the co-op's 10 Illinois locations. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Everybody moving across the Midwest now?
We are actively in harvest right now. It seems like it's taken quite a while for things to pick up. And, you know, right now it's still not what I would call huge days, but at least the run is steady. Harvest progress, you know, if I look at corn receipts compared to projection, I'm somewhere between 3 and 10% at the different locations. Beans anywhere from 5% in a couple areas that were really wet and didn't get in until late to 85% done in some other places on soybeans.
You have elevators in which counties? Ford, McLean?
Champaign, Ford, and Iroquois.
And Iroquois. So who's the farthest ahead?
Iroquois is leading the pack. They were in good 2 to 3 weeks before our Ford County elevators were and have looked good basically all summer like everybody. In August, they suffered a little bit from dry weather, but things are still looking really good comparatively there.
Then they're running ahead on terms of yield for both corn and soybeans as well?
Yes, yes.
And what kinds of averages are you getting from one location to the next?
Oh, on soybeans, I am anywhere from low to mid-40s to low to mid-50s. I'm not seeing a whole lot of, you know, 60, 65 huge bushel yields. A lot of variety on there. You know, we were going in early thinking maybe the later beans would be better. I'm not sure if that'll be the case or not now.
I'll bet that your bids are low enough now that producers aren't selling much. Is that right?
No, there's very little going on cash. You know, the good side is there was quite a bit on the books early. So we're applying against contract, but as far as new sales, there's very little happening. With today's market activity, we're just going out basis only tonight.
What is your bid?
So we are at 32 under on nearby corn and 45 under on soybeans.
All right, thanks much.
Thank you.
That is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center will be here, and after that, on most of these stations, we'll talk with Glenn Ring.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Teachers at Rantoul Township High School will vote next week on a tentative contract agreement after working for several weeks without one. Superintendent David Requa says he's pleased with how negotiations worked out. Administrators and teachers came to terms on the agreement early this morning with the help of a mediator 6 months after talks began. Neither side is releasing details until the union's rank and file and school board vote on it. Champaign County's auditor is withholding payment to a contractor because of a concern over nepotism. Tony Fabry says the situation may require the county to reopen the definition of nepotism, which under current law forbids county employees from hiring family members for jobs. But Fabry says the director of the county's physical plant hired a firm co-owned by the man's son to work on the remodeling project at the county's Brooklyn Center. Fabry says B&R Contracting has already been paid almost $5,000, but he's withholding other invoices until he gets a legal opinion. Budget officials say Indiana is in better shape than many other states in the financial crisis. Office of Management and Budget Director Ryan Kitchell says Indiana's taken steps to balance the budget and make payments owed to schools and local governments. The state finished the year that ended June 30th with a budget surplus of about $1.4 billion. The University of Illinois' Urbana Chancellor and a professor are among those being named to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences tomorrow. The group being inducted this year includes more than 200 notable people in the arts and sciences, business, public affairs, and not-for-profit sectors. Chancellor Richard Herman and chemistry professor Jeffrey Moore are among the honorees of the Academy, which was founded in 1780. A mortgage lender is suing to try to force Cook County's sheriff to resume evicting people from foreclosed homes. This week, Sheriff Tom Dart announced he'd stop sending deputies on court-ordered mortgage foreclosure evictions because many of those forced out were renters who had faithfully paid rent. But accredited home lenders filed suit yesterday to get Dart to obey an order that calls for the eviction of a Dalton woman from her foreclosed bungalow. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Time to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. And Steve Hilberg with NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center is here this afternoon. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Oh, it is a beautiful day right here in the Midwest.
Yeah, it's about a perfect day for being outside for anything, including field work. We got temperatures in the mid-70s, dew points in the mid-40s for the most part, actually in the mid-30s up in northern Illinois, and a little bit of a breeze, so good drying conditions, and it looks like a warm, dry weekend is ahead as well.
And after that?
Well, we got a cold front coming through here early next week, sort of associated with that same system that's bringing or threatening to bring some heavy snow to the northern Rockies, Montana, and Wyoming and the Dakotas. That front looks like, as Ed's been mentioning today, or has been slowing down, so it looks like that probably will be coming through here Tuesday. And it's going to be a fairly strong front, at least at passage, so it'll probably kick off some good showers and thunderstorms across the state, but should progress eastward pretty rapidly, bring us a dry midweek period, and then there are signs there could be another little disturbance late in the week that might bring some scattered showers to central and southern Illinois about Thursday or Friday, but that doesn't look like anything too much to worry about. I think coverage would be pretty marginal on that, and amounts probably wouldn't be very heavy either. I think the biggest precip producer this week is going to be the front on Tuesday.
And the front on Tuesday. Which one of those was associated, I think, potentially with the hurricane that was going to hit Mexico?
Actually, none particularly.
Neither of them? Maybe I just remembered that wrong.
Into the desert southwest this time of year. And the front coming through Tuesday will probably pick up a little bit of that moisture, but it'll be progressing fast enough where we're not going to get a prolonged rainfall event here. So while we may see some half-inch to three-quarter-inch amounts and heavier storms on Tuesday, it's going to pretty well clip right through here and not be a problem.
As you look around the nation, any place have real troubles that are brewing?
Well, Northern Plains probably is the one that's most in trouble at this point. Could be some cold weather. Well, there is some cold weather up there, and going to be some freezing weather probably in the well across the Dakotas over the weekend and early next week. Beyond that, it doesn't look too bad. Get some wet weather in Texas and some of the wheat areas, but which is not all that unusual. But in general, most of the corn and soybean belt next week should be in pretty good shape.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon? For instance,
no.
When we're headed for the coldest air and when we might get a killing frost?
Well, it looks like it's going to be beyond the scope of our current outlooks. There are some indications of some colder weather the last week of the month that could do that, but that's pretty much what we call fantasy land at this point. We'll have to wait and see.
That is very good news on a Friday afternoon.
All right, Todd.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Steve Hilberg is the director of NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center, joining us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. We'll say goodbye now to some of our listeners. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll talk with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises about the commodity markets, this morning's USDA crop production report, and how he sees the financial markets unfolding over the next several months and possibly years. That all coming up in the second half hour edition of the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Here's what the Dow Jones Industrial Average is currently doing. It appears that there's a bit of a rally in New York for the Dow Jones Industrial Average as we head into the last 25 minutes worth of trade. The Dow on my quote screen showing it up 161 points. That's a gain of 1.88%. Currently trading at, 8,740 points for the afternoon. Let's take a look at some other numbers that you might find of interest if you're one of our farmer listeners on this afternoon. We'll go through these numbers on Commodity Week as well when we talk with Tom Fritz. He's with EFG. That'll air tomorrow on some of these radio stations. Of course, you can pick it up off our website at willag.org anytime you'd like. December wheat today. On the week, actually, was off 76¾ cents. Corn futures, despite the losses today, which were down 30 on November in the corn, and that's the limit move, were off just 45¾. Not bad on a really tough week. Soybeans were down 82 cents, but 70 cents of that was the loss today. And cattle futures were off. This is where things got really pretty rough. $6.47.5 in live cattle. And the feeders were down 5.22. Hogs were down 42.5 cents for the week. So on the line with us now to take a look at what's been happening in these marketplaces and the USDA reports along with the financial markets is Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. For those of you who are not familiar, you can visit glennring.com anytime you'd like to take a look at what Glenn's thinking. He has a very popular website and newsletter that he releases on a regular basis and was a presenter during our all-day Ag Outlook meeting this past March, in which in the middle of meeting, Glenn, I have to admit you stood up and interrupted and said, for all intents and purposes, it's over now. And be careful. So I guess maybe you were right, huh?
Well, we get lucky once in a while, be the way I guess the way I view it. But it's simply it's really not being right, but it's responding to the signals. And the signals of the marketplace told me that was it.
Well, indeed, they told you that was it. What about now, today? What do you see?
Well, I'm actually cautiously optimistic that we're getting close to some short-term lows. And things like the stock market and such, and that'll give us some feel-good relief. But the long-term picture, we have seen a shift occur that is likely to take a couple of decades to run through. We're on our way to basically the in fact, you probably listeners probably have it on archives as well on the website from a previous show in late September, where I talked about that the debt bomb has detonated; it's imploding. Our credit expansion is over, and historically, when a credit expansion like this ends, we go through deflation and a lot. We don't know it yet, but a lot lower volatility for a couple of decades to come. But first, we have to work off an awful lot of excesses from the system.
We have to work off excesses in the system, and I think in your latest newsletter released today that you talk a little bit about that and how the masses will change their views and their habits and become risk-averse?
Yes, indeed. That's a great catch on your part already on that, very perceptive. That's what's going to happen. The marketplace, people change their behavior through by being traumatized. And trauma doesn't have to be real pain. It can be perceived pain. And the kind of breaks we're having in the marketplace, the excesses, the danger that we've gotten into by over-leveraging, et cetera, are going to come back to haunt us. And that behavior change, like I say, the speculative phase is over. Those who think speculation is coming back, I mean, I appreciate that feeling. It's hard to get rid of what we've gone through in the last couple of years, but that's gone. And the spec money isn't coming back. People are going to batten down the hatches. People are going to move to a cash society. Now, that doesn't mean an absolute. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
There'll be some shrewd business people and others that will continue to flow on credit and things like that. But the average consumer is going to back away into back to what our parents or grandparents had for an attitude of, if you can't pay cash, don't pay for it.
So the end of credit in that form. Tell me about this risk aversion just a bit, and I maybe you can talk about paper losses and actual losses and the difference. For instance, I had somebody today tell me, well, that he was out $45,000 for the week, and I'm wondering whether really he's out $45 or if it $45,000 or if it just looks like he's out $45,000 at this point.
Yeah, that's another great point. We have one of the things that sometimes you'll hear too that we were that we've often seen the talk about where the stock market lost $1 trillion over X amount of time.
Right.
Well, if you had it on paper but never captured it, you never had it. So that it was an artificial gain in the sense that it was real that you could have captured it had you liquidated a position. But on the flip side, it's only a paper gain until you capture it, and it's only a potential. So a lot of people haven't really lost anything they didn't have. Now, a lot of people have lost things that they were planning on,
right,
counting on. But even there, I would urge a lot of caution, calmness, let calmness prevail. In fact, I find that this has probably been one of my calmest times because I think I understand what's happening. And I do know that we'll see a lot of pain because of it around. But, most of the people, for example, if we're getting close to retirement or something and counting on stock market gains, we'll probably get a recovery. I mean, the recovery will come at some point in time. It may be a few years out. And very few people cash out their entire retirement plan in one shot. So, especially for my kids and even for myself with another, decade or so to go to retirement, I'm starting to look at this as a buying opportunity.
Well, I wondered about that, too. So let's talk about the pain to begin with. So the pain is only inflicted when you cash out, right?
On that degree, it is, yes. And the fact that, it is just classic as you get older. I remember it while my mother was alive, the fear of insecurity that brings is probably the better pain. It's a perceived pain. More than the reality, most of us are not going to end up out on the street, nor without being cared for. It's just that there's uncertainty whether it'll be there, and it can be paralyzing. I often tell people, and especially in presentations, I remember my grandmother, who was a young adult, late teen, young adult in the during the Depression, and how that scarred her so much because she literally, her father would leave and work for a week. And sometimes they would literally go without food for 5 days. And she was a neat person, kept everything clean, but she never, ever threw anything away. And I can remember I tell this story about what it represents to people, that she would bring for Christmas every year while my dad was alive, it would be a $5 bill and a can of fruit. And that can of fruit meant so much. It had such a representation for my grandmother as to what it was for, because that represented security. So mankind goes through this cycle, and it usually takes about 3 generations to go through. But the bottom line is it starts with people being worried about making sure that they were secure, that they had enough food to make the year, had a roof over their heads and stuff like that. Then as they get a little bit more affluent, they build themselves up to being, they can store stuff. They build equity. Then as it gets too easy and people discover leveraging through borrowing, they get to the point where they're not even worried about their security, and that leads to rampant speculation. Now, the phase that builds up to rampant speculation, sometimes takes 4 or 5 decades, like we did from the 1930s. To the rampant speculation we saw now. We thought we saw rampant speculation in the 1970s leading to 1980, but that was more so focused in one segment. This was widespread. And when that rampant speculation ends, it's amazing, as we're seeing right now, how fast that cycle can revert all the way back to fear for security. And that's what we're facing right now. We are, and that behavior then becomes this, that's the pain that becomes inflicted on, again, even real or imagined, that people say, gee, I'm going to quit borrowing, I'm going to quit buying things I don't need. They'll focus on necessities, which means foods will do relatively well.
Right.
But that's not that encouraging if you own foods and somebody's office, real estate goes down by 90% and your foods go down by 50% that you're selling. So that doesn't mean things will be great, but it also means that, that you will do relatively better being in agriculture, in my view.
Very quickly, recap what you saw in the reports this morning and how you would view all of that from the USDA perspective and what farmers can expect over the coming year or 2 years or 3 years or however long you want to go out.
Sure. First of all, I'm not primarily not a fundamentalist. However, I'm not sure whether trends and fundamentals count as technical or fundamental. So, and I do care about the trends and the fundamentals. And I've been seeing since the start of the year, and I've been telling my local farm groups that at year end, the usage on corn, you know, the usage in the start of the year would be way overstated compared to what it would be at the end of the year, and that things like the feed use of wheat would be higher as we would shift things. And these are the trends I've been seeing, but more importantly, the trends I've been seeing, what bothers me out there is that, you know, for the most part, we've been seeing growing world carryovers over time. And in the recent weeks, we've seen the Brazilian real depreciate by 30%, meaning suddenly their soybeans are going to be a lot more business, you know, competitive on the world markets again, right about the time they're getting ready to plant. So I think that'll stimulate supply down there. Long story short, I have a lot of cycle lows due, major ones, starting in later 2009, primarily in wheat, soybean meal, and running through late 2010, which would include corn and crude oil, so and the CRB index as well. So I expect a deflationary phase here to be pretty powerful from now through 2010. Even if we're into a relatively, like I say, a deflationary phase on the macro degree of the last two decades, it is not unheard of for prices to reach effectively the low of the band already in the first year or two of that phase, and then we start going into a trading range type behavior. And if we do, the years from 2010 on out for a decade or more, it could look a lot like we did in the 1980s and 1990s in agriculture.
Possibly. So I'm going to assume that the band is much higher up.
No, not a safe assumption.
Wrong assumption.
Not a safe assumption. The problem
180 to 250?
Beans or corn?
Corn.
Okay. We may go all the way back to the lows, and here's why.
At 173 or 5.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I got to be prepared for it. Whether it happens or not, I'm taking the stance, by the way, in public of the worst-case scenario because it's the one I have to protect against, and if everything turns out better, great. So with that said, the dollar index, and it's not the best measure of the dollar, but it's the most visible one. So I use that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
From the 2001-2002 double top to the low we made in March of this year, the dollar index declined by around figures 50 points. That's the equivalent of about 40% in the value of the index as an exchange item on the world. In that time, we saw tremendous inflation in our commodity prices. Now, it only takes, from making a low at 70 in the dollar index, it only takes a 35-point rally, which is, you know, two-thirds of that decline.
You got 30 seconds at the moment.
Okay. And.
But we have 6 minutes after that. How about we finish this conversation in 2 minutes? What do you think?
That'd be great.
Okay, thanks much, Glenn. Glenn Ring is with Glenn Ring Enterprises. He's in Iowa and joins us here on the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report this afternoon. We'll talk more with him in just 2 minutes. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Pretty Nails and Mr. John's School of Cosmetology.
Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. He says tonight skies should be mostly clear. Lows will range from 45 in northeastern Indiana to 57 in the far south. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Highs will range from 72 in the far northeastern parts of Illinois to 86 in the far south. The extended forecast calls dry weather to continue right on through Sunday and Monday. The next chance of rain, says Ed, will come on Tuesday and Tuesday night as a cool front pushes through Illinois and Indiana. And dry weather should follow for about a day and a half before another round of showers is possible late next week. Warmer than average temperatures will continue through Monday, and then slightly cooler weather is expected during the middle of next week. It should perhaps be followed by another round of warmer than average weather. Starting during the weekend of October the 18th and the 19th, a freeze not expected through at least the 23rd of October. The latest model output continues to show near-freezing morning temperatures in the western Dakotas, Montana, and Wyoming Monday, and in the eastern Dakotas and western Minnesota on Tuesday. The outside of the far northwest, the Corn Belt, stays far away from a freeze threat through next week.
Today's programs are made possible with support from the Champaign-Urbana Tenant Union, helping people resolve housing problems for more than 30 years. The Tenant Union is a proud member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll donation at work, on the web at cs-il.org.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. Just about another 7 minutes to continue our discussion this afternoon with Glenn Ring about the financial markets, the commodity markets, and the future of it all. When we left him, he was taking up the subject of the dollar index. Can you continue on with that, please?
I can continue on. The point that I was making is the dollar index fell by about 40% in value from 2002 to 2007. And we have seen that's what led to this great inflation in commodity prices. That, and again, that was about a 40% decline or 50 points. Now, though, by declining to 70, if the dollar index were to make a 35-point rebound or about a two-thirds retracement, it would appreciate 50% in value. And so if a 40% decline sparked great inflation, there's every reason to believe that a 50% rebound in the dollar, 50% appreciation of the dollar, would cause great deflation. History says that's likely, and that certainly is what the action appears to be happening now. And here's what's incredible. Just since July, the dollar index has appreciated, as of today, 25% already. So that is a strong lead. When I was there in the March meeting, I showed, using gold as a proxy at that point, I showed how gold, how the dollar end, what happens to the dollar leads corn and bean prices. And if the dollar's going up, ag prices are coming down.
Right. So we've managed to push the dollar, and I didn't take a look at it. Is it still over 80 at this point? Is that right?
82.64 the last trade.
And it was up something
140 points.
140 points a day. It was up 140 points. So you're suggesting that if we were to rally to 115?
105. That would be a 35-point gain. That would be a 50% appreciation of the dollar, and that would just that's what can send us all the way back to $2 corn, I'm afraid.
So the strong dollar in this case would not be good for the agricultural economy.
Right, but sadly, I don't think our nation has a choice. The alternative to the mess that we've been in right now is a total collapse of the currency system. And, I mean, these have happened. I've tracked this back to the time of Christ and how these grand cycles repeat. And I give right now the Fed and the Treasury an A-plus for the efforts they've made. I don't know that they're the right ones, but we know from history what the wrong ones are to do. No entity has ever saved a system from a collapse like this, and these guys have the best chance of anybody to keep us going. And if we can bleed off the excesses over a couple of decades, we will be better for it. Otherwise, our kids and grandkids will pay even worse.
If I remember correctly, in March you were talking about a true collapse somewhere under 70 for the dollar. Is that right, or was it lower?
If we broke out below 70, right, it would be a true collapse, and run the risk of and again, this is history. This is not my opinion. This is history of anarchy. You know, leading to an anarchy, leading to such a collapse in the currency, especially in a financial anarchy, if not a literal one, an anarchy in the currency system. And we saved it. It held right where it had to hold. And so far, so good. I mean, as far as that goes. So for our nation, for the long run, this is good. But I've been warning my customers here all year that, you know, a lot of them are pressured to buy next year's inputs, price those. And I've just been warning them, you absolutely don't buy next year's inputs if you didn't sell next year's crop. And, you know, we've been pushing to have 3 years worth of crop sold. Now, whether that's, you know, whether that's prudent now with the kind of declines, that becomes a touchy subject. But the bottom line, Todd, that I would tell people out here is the lesson I think they ought to take from this right now is when rallies come, and they will at some time, and I don't know if they'll get any higher than we are now, but when rallies come, they're going to have to sell them. You're going to sell rallies from now until 2010.
All rallies.
Say that one more time.
All rallies between now and 2010, you want a producer?
For all practical purposes, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So
yes.
The you need to be on the defensive posture then.
Absolutely.
Rather than, and does this mean sell earlier rather than later in the years too?
Most likely. We're basically going to track it as it goes. I have another weekly cycle load due next March, so I'm expecting two sets of harvest pressure, one now, probably culminating as early as mid-November,
mm-hmm.
and then probably at least a flat market, maybe a recovery into the early winter, and then another harvest in March when that weekly low comes due. And especially for people that didn't sell a lot of grain or carrying a lot of inventory, I have a feeling banks are going to be pretty tough on their financing. You know, you're probably going to have to convert that grain to cash.
Right, so they're going to want the cash as opposed to credit, naturally. Okay, so I want to go back to one other issue. We've got, about 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Not quite that much at this point. Something you alluded to earlier, and I was thinking about earlier in the week, you said there might be some buys out there. What do you think is a buy in the stocks or other things at this point?
Sure. I'm looking now, Todd, to buy companies, not stocks. And what I mean by that is, I think we're back to where we can do value buying, where you look at, you know, price-earnings ratios. I'm watching some that are down around 3.5 to 4 already and stuff like that. And I'm looking still for things that handle natural resources. Oh, things like, say, pipeline companies that transport energies and things like that. Service-related in the commodity field, I like those things long-term. But the key here is I've got to be willing to kind of buy them and throw them in a drawer and forget them.
So who do you buy? You've got about 40 seconds.
Well, I'm not an equities analyst, so I really have to beg off on that, because other people out there are probably just as well versed on their own and go to their advisor and ask for that kind of help. I also think that when the money flow eases on the outside, this panic, which probably will end before October.
Right.
The meats are the most likely to recover first.
Okay, thanks much.
All right, you're welcome.
Oh, indeed. That's Glenn Ring from GlennRingEnterprises.com. You can read anything he's got to say right there on his website at GlennRing.com. We appreciate him joining us this afternoon on this Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason.